There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold.
You're listening to Step Into the Light with Patty Sheen.
Who brings a fire, ignites a candle, and makes his own.
This is the show where Christians share their walk from darkness down a sometimes long and lonely path to the light of healing and fulfillment through faith.
Seek out the hopeless, confused and torn, and hold out your candle for all to see, and take your candle and go light your world.
Right here. On Blog Talk Radio.
Take your candle and go light your world.
Good morning and welcome to this 25th episode of Step Into the Light on this Tuesday morning, March 8th. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Patty Sheen. On this show, we talk about the shadows that creep across the paths of our lives at one time or another in the form of such difficult circumstances as abuse, divorce, addiction, fear, heartbreak, debt, guilt, loss of a loved one, and rejection. Conversely, my guests shed light on those dark times with messages of hope, healing, success, perseverance, faith, and love. I'd like to let listeners know where they can catch the show at another time if they're not able to stay with us and listen through the entire hour this morning. I have a website, and it is entitled Patty Sheen, PattiSheene.com. On that site, you will find a link on the very first page to this particular show. You'll also find the link on the Step Into the Light Show of the Week page. After that, I have a Blog Talk Radio tab. And there is a page under that tab entitled Archived Step Into the Light Shows. And you can go to that page and you will find a link to every show that we have recorded to date. So we invite listeners to come back and listen to this one if you're unable to listen to all of it this morning or listen to it again or whatever. And, of course, to listen to any of our other shows that we have also recorded over the past few months. I also have a Step Into the Light Facebook page. Love to have you come over and like that. You can join me on Twitter. My handle there is at Patty Sheen. And I have a Pinterest board, a Pinterest page. And on my Pinterest page, I have a board that is specific to Step Into the Light. And there I have pictures of my guests and any books that they may have written or whatever. Well, this has been kind of a tough couple of weeks for me. I think I told listeners last week that my mom passed away on the 19th of February. The service will not be held until the 12th of March, which is this coming Saturday. So it's been a tough few weeks for both my sister, who is back in New York where mom passed, and me out here in Colorado. We've done a lot of communicating back and forth, making final arrangements from the long distance. And then, of course, there's been the emotional roller coaster that goes along with the loss of a very special and very dear loved one. So it's been kind of a tough week. I would like to encourage listeners, if you're experiencing a similar situation, to take the time to grieve, take the time to make contact with friends that you know are going to be supportive, take the time to pray and to share with God your sadness and the loneliness that you feel and all of those emotions that he already knows about. Anyway, I would like to remind listeners that this coming Sunday, the 13th of March, is when we change back. For those who are in an area that does this, we change back to Mountain Daylight Time. That occurs technically at 2 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, on Sunday morning. Most people don't get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to set their clocks ahead. They do it the night before. So just a reminder that this is the day for that coming up, this coming Saturday night to Sunday morning. It's time to introduce our guest for today. It is my pure pleasure to welcome someone who I have known for many years. It wasn't until recently that I came to realize how little I truly knew about him. Living a life of hopelessness fed by drug addiction, my nephew by marriage, Juan Cecito has agreed to guest on the show today to share the story of his journey from dark despair to a completely new outlook on life in the light of sobriety and God's love. Juan served 2.5 years in the United States Navy in Norfolk, Virginia, and has spent the major part of his life in the small southeastern Colorado town of Las Animas. If you are an addict or know an addict, you'll want to hear Juan's message of hope, healing, and recovery. We invite you to stay with us at Step Into the Light with Patty Sheen, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the show, Juan.
Well, thank you, Pat. It's an honor to be on to talk to you and share my story with you.
Well, I'm
hopefully
so pleased
touch
to have
somebody.
I'm hoping that too, Juan. And like I told our listeners earlier, Juan is my nephew by marriage. So we have known each other for a number of years. However, there are a lot of things about this young man that I did not know, that I was pretty shocked to find out. And he's going to share some of that with us today. So if you could tell us, Juan, what was your first drug experience? What did it entail? Was it alcohol use, marijuana? What was the first thing that kind of led you down the path?
What first led me down the path was marijuana. I started off with that, and, you know, I thought I had a handle on it, you know, just trying to be the cool guy. And I ended up using, you know, heavier drugs. I started getting, you know, smoking hash, and then I started taking LSD and mushrooms.
Oh,
and, yeah, besides the alcohol, you know, there was just a lot of things that, you know, it just gradually, one thing led to another. Marijuana led to drinking. Marijuana and drinking led to me doing LSD and the mushrooms and all the other drugs, you know. I mean, it just progressed as I went on.
How old were you when you first started using, Juan?
I was 13 years old.
So you were pretty young.
I was in seventh grade.
You were
I smoked it because I thought it would help me, you know, take the pain away and take away all the stuff that's, you know, that was built up inside me. I thought it would help, you know, take it away, but it didn't.
Sure. So you had some, would you say it was family issues or peer pressure, or what was going on? If you feel comfortable sharing that.
Yes, I don't mind. Yeah, it was mostly family, to be honest with you, Aunt Pat. I was physically abused by my stepdad. You know, he always used to beat me all the time, you know, and my sister, my mom, you know, it was pretty bad, you know, and that's the way I thought, that's the way I was supposed to grow up, you know. You know, he would always tell me, you know, men don't cry, boys don't cry, you know. So I never cried. I never showed any kind of emotion.
Sure.
You know, that's what was embedded in my head, you know, the whole time I was growing up, you know. Well, you got to defend yourself, you got to fight, you know. So I thought maybe, you know, smoking weed would help me relieve that pain, you know, and take all that bad stuff away. And it didn't. It actually led to worse things, you know. Led me into worse drugs, alcohol, and it carried on throughout my life, you know, and I didn't think it would.
So what were the signs that made you realize that you had crossed the line from more or less recreational use of these substances to addiction?
When I finally realized that I went from recreational substance use to addiction was when when I was younger, I started stealing for my drugs that I needed to get, you know, for my marijuana or, you know, even for my alcohol. I used to break into houses when I was younger, you know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, me and a bunch of my friends, you know, my cousin Frank and Ronnie, we all used to break into houses to do, you know, to supply our habit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's when I knew that I had crossed the line from just recreational use that I thought I had under control to addiction, to where I knew, you know, I had to break into somebody's house in order to get my drugs.
Sure.
Or money or whatever, you know. And that's with any addict, you know. And that's what's sad about this town right now, Los Animas, is that the drugs are taking over this town. And, you know, I, as an addict, you know, I want to go out and help and share my story, you know.
Right. Well, your addiction led you, I'm sure, it goes without saying pretty much, that it led you into encounters with law enforcement. And what were the consequences of that? Did you end up doing jail time?
Oh, yes, yes. When I was younger, like I said, when I was younger in my addiction, you know, I was a juvenile. So they would just put me on probation and, you know, pay fines and stuff like that. Well, when I got older, you know, I would drink or anything. I'd go to the bars and just look for fights, you know, because, I don't know, that's what alcohol did to me. And I'll be the first to tell you I'm the worst drunk to ever be around. Yes, I'm very violent. I'm very, I'm just a terrible person. And that's not the person that Juan is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, I really don't drink that. I really don't drink it, period, anymore. You know what I'm saying? I've got 2 years of sobriety underneath me. You know, I've lost 5 members of my family, on my mom's side of the family, due to cirrhosis of the liver, due to alcohol drinking and excessive drug use.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I think the addiction part really carries on my mom's side.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
But
it really did lead me into, you know, after I got off of, you know, out of juvenile part, when I got older and I was an adult, you know, I would, any trouble I would get into, you know, fights, assaults, anything like that, I was charged with, you know, for a long time, you know, because of my alcohol and drug use. I've spent numerous days, months in a county jail. You know, in 2006, I got busted with 2 ounces of cocaine. That really, I thought it was going to open up my eyes, but it really didn't. I ended up spending like 9 months in jail, I think it was.
Wow.
I was on five years probation. I had to do 45 days intense rehab at a community at Alamosa Community Corrections in Alamosa. Just since here and there, you know, because of my alcohol use, I'd get in fights and stuff. I'd be in jail, you know. I'd spend the weekend, I'd see the judge the following, you know, on Monday, and, you know, I'd end up, you know, just paying more court costs and fines.
Sure.
You know, instead of having that money in my pocket, where is it going? It's going to the courts, you know.
Mm-hmm. And when you were in jail, do you feel like the other inmates around you were a negative influence? Did you kind of get together and say, oh, I haven't done this one yet? Did the stories make you escalate your behavior when you got out is more my question.
You know, it never, you know, when I was in there with other inmates, we would talk about, you know, drug use that we would be doing out there, and, you know, what we were doing and stuff like that. You know, but I have experimented with a lot of drugs, in my life, you know, like I said, I started off with marijuana, drinking, acid, mushrooms, cocaine, methamphetamines. The only thing I've never touched is heroin.
Mm-hmm.
I've never done heroin, but pretty much all the other drugs, I'm not a pill person, so I've never really taken pills, but other than that, any other drug that is out there, I've probably taken.
Mm-hmm. Well, you went to rehab several times, if I understand correctly. Is that right?
Yes.
So what was the turning point that resulted in the two-year sobriety that you're celebrating now, Juan? There has to have been something that kind of made you say, wow, been down this road before, but this time it's mm-hmm. different.
You know, and Pat, I love that question because, you know, it's a big part of my story, is that what really turned me around was when I was really bad in methamphetamines, and I was doing them intravenously. My dad kicked me out of their house. They didn't want to have nothing to do with me. I mean, I lost mm-hmm. all contact with all my family, my brothers, sisters, my children, my six children that I have, and the six grandchildren that I have. I just lost all contact with them because I put the drug before them. And what turned me around was that I was sleeping in the backyard of a friend's house in my tent, and mm-hmm. I had a 50 of methamphetamines, and I said, you know, well, it was all I got. I might as well do it. So, you know, I did it, did it IV, and I was just laying there, and I was looking up at the stars, and I just looked up, and I said, God, this is not me. This is not Juan. Help me, you know. And I don't know, he gave me the courage. I don't know, you know, what it was, but I got the courage to come and talk to Mom and Dad about it. And I just talked to him. I mean, I was crying, you know, to my dad saying, you know, if you guys don't help me out and please let me back in, that I'm going to end up dying out here. Mm-hmm. So they let me mm-hmm. back in. They let me back in the house. And, you know, they put a pretty much lock and key on me, you know what I'm saying? Put me on lockdown pretty much, you know.
Right. And how old were you by now, Juan? If I can interrupt for a second, how old were you by now?
I was 46 years old, 47 years old.
Okay, so you weren't any young kid.
No.
I just wanted to clarify that for listeners.
Yes, yeah, I was 46, 47 years old. And through this time that I was doing all this drug use, and when I finally did this last shot of meth, and my parents let me back in, I went and, you know, I was seeing a therapist, and I still am to this day. I see a therapist, and I finally came truthful with him. I says, hey, you know, I need to tell you something. And I told him, I said, I've been using methamphetamine. And he says, I knew you were doing something, Juan. I was just waiting for you to come and tell me that you need help. And I said, I do. Yeah, come clean with it. And so, you know, I did. And I told him, I says, you know, I don't want her. I don't want my, because I was on probation. And I told him, I said, I don't want my PO to revoke my probation, because if she does, I will run. Mm-hmm. I will run, you know. And he says, okay. And he says, when do you see her? I says, well, I see her tomorrow, you know. And so he says, okay, well, just tell her what you told me, and then we'll talk. And so I went, the next day I went and talked to my probation officer, and I told her what I was doing. And I told her, I says, you know, if you try to revoke my probation, I'm just letting you know right now, Carrie, that I will run. And she goes, no, Juan, don't do that. I don't want to hurt you more. I want to help you. Do you want mm-hmm. help? I'm willing to help you. So, you know, I am grateful to God for her and my therapist, you know, especially Carrie, for giving me the opportunity to get help, because I wanted help. I knew that if I didn't, I was going to end up dead.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so she said, okay, Juan, come back. You know, I was seeing her like every other week. She said, come back next week and we'll talk, and hopefully I'll get you in somewhere. So she called me in. And, you know, I went in the next week, and I talked to her, and she says, well, how about if I get you into, I think it's Spanish Peaks or something like that in Pueblo or Springs for 2 weeks. It's intense rehab. I said, you know, you're going to classes every day, all day. And I says, no. I says, if you, if you, if you send me to a 2-week program, that's just like sending a, you know, giving a crackhead a crack pipe and telling him to stop smoking crack. I said, if you give me 30 days, if you give me 30 days, I promise you, I will stay clean and I will stay sober. I promise you that. And mm-hmm. so, she says, well, hold on a second, Juan. She says, can you come back later on this afternoon? I said, yeah, that's no problem. So I came back later on that afternoon, and she goes, well, I could get you into Rosada. And she goes, but you won't be able to go in, you know, for at least another 2 weeks. Do you think you can handle it? I said, yeah, I can handle it. And so I went to Rosada. I told myself, I said, I'm going to go in there with an open mind and an open heart, you know, because I got to do this. I want to stay clean, you know. And so I went in with an open mind, open heart, and just started working the steps. And before I went in there, Pat, my daughter, my only daughter, who is the queen of my life, you know, she wrote me a letter that, oh, you know, it brings tears to my eyes to this day, you know, and I carry it in my Bible everywhere I go. It's in my Bible just to remind me of what I was at one mm-hmm. point in my life. You know what I'm saying? Because she didn't want to have nothing to do with me. She told me the truth, you know. She just said that, you know, you put drugs before me, you put everything before me, and mm-hmm. it seemed like you don't have time for me, you know. And it was more deeper than that. But that right there was the breaking and turning point of my life and in my recovery, was getting that letter and Kerry putting me into Rosada for 30 days. And
to clarify real quick, Juan, to clarify for listeners, your daughter is 14, 15 now?
She's 15.
15, okay, yeah.
Yes.
Once again, I just wanted to clarify that for our listeners so that they know.
Yes, yeah. And at that time, she was, at the time that I went into rehab, you figure she's 15, going to be 15 this year in May. She was 11 years
when
old.
When she wrote that letter?
11, yeah, when she wrote the 12 years, 11, 12 years old when she wrote me that letter.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, you know, I've taken my sobriety, oh, man, so serious that, you know, I just love it. But
yeah.
That was the turning point, you know. I mean, just being in Rosada, because I've been in numerous ones. Like, I've been to the one in Alamosa for 45 days at the community corrections there. I've been to numerous alcohol classes. I've been to numerous drug classes. But I just went in there because the courts wanted me to. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I had to do it. I didn't want
yes.
to. You know, and mm-hmm. an addict, you know, if in an addict has to want to quit. Because if you try to make an addict quit, you're just wasting your breath. Just,
mm-hmm.
you know, because
mm-hmm.
he's got to want that. He's got to want it. And I wanted it at the time. So, you know, working the steps in there and working the program and just listening to other people's stories and other speakers that came in, you know, I just learned, I just got a lot of tools to where I could put it in my toolbox and use it for later. And that's what I
right.
do. Yeah.
And to clarify for listeners again, Rosada is a local rehab center here in our town. And I honestly, Juan, I'm not sure what it stands for. The letters, do you know?
You know what? To be honest, I really don't. I really don't.
That's terrible. I should have looked that up. But probably recovery something, but I have no idea. Recovery something,
I really
substance
don't.
Abuse, I'm sure, and drug
yeah.
addiction maybe. I don't know. But anyway, it's just so listeners know, it is a local rehab center here, right in our small town.
Yes.
We will go to a short commercial break now. First, I wanted to make listeners aware that you are listening to Step Into the Light with Patty Sheen right here on Blog Talk Radio. Our guest today is Juan Cecito. Juan is a recovering drug addict who has just celebrated 2 years of sobriety. Our commercial break will take about 3.5 minutes, so stay with us and we will be back momentarily. Are you fighting what seems to be a never-ending battle to take off excess pounds? Have you tried diet after diet, resolved to banish the sweets and starches from your life forever, and fervently prayed for willpower? Author Janet K. Brown let God do the fighting for her, and she won with a 95-pound weight loss that she has maintained for close to 20 years. Now, Janet shares the lessons she learned with her devotional entitled Divine Dining, 365 Devotions to Guide You to Healthier Weight and Abundant Wellness. Allow yourself to be guided through your weight journey with these practical and inspirational daily readings grounded in Scripture, illustrated with many of Janet's own experiences, and reinforced with a short prayer. This toolbox for overeaters combines a 12-step approach with a focus on the need for Christ as the center of your struggle. Janet's passion for diet, fitness, and God's Word holds the hope for you to achieve success as you strive to make choices that will lead to lasting lifestyle changes. Divine Dining, 365 Devotions to Guide You to Healthier Weight and Abundant Wellness by Janet K. Brown is available at Penn L. Publishing, Barnes & Noble, and Amazon. Planning a trip to Colorado this year? 80 miles southeast of Pueblo on Highway 50, you'll find the town of Los Animas, where rich early 1900s American history is preserved within the walls of the John W. Rawlings Heritage Center and Museum. Since the opening of the new museum in May of 2012, the Pioneer Historical Society of Bent County is proud of the accomplishments of its all-volunteer team. Exhibits depict life on the plains in the early 1900s through the replication of home and business structures and possessions of such historical figures as John W. and Dorothy Hogue Rawlings, Kit Carson, Ambassador Thompson, and Ken Curtis, who played Festus Hagen on the long-running western Gunsmoke. Artifacts depict the life of the Native American, rancher, and farmer, and showcase tools of such professions as the cobbler, railroad worker, medical professional, and military. The Grand Hall on the second floor includes several quilt exhibits and an independent order of Oddfellows exhibit. The Old Trail Gallery features unique gifts made by local artists and historical publications of the Pioneer Historical Society of Bent County, such as the Bent County Chronicle. The John W. Rawlings Heritage Center and Museum holds a treasure trove of information for any history buff or historical author interested in events that unfolded in southeastern Colorado in the early 1900s. Located at 560 Bent Avenue in Los Animas, the museum is open Tuesday through Saturday, noon to 4 p.m. Cost of admission is $5 for adults, $4 for children, 6 to 12, with free parking available on site. For further information, contact them at 719-456-6066. If you drop by, be sure to tell them Patty Sheen of Step Into the Light sent you. Would you like an ad for your business, new book, or other product broadcast on Step Into the Light? Contact Patty Sheen at patty.sheen@gmail.com. That's patti.sheen@gmail.com. Now it's time to return to our show. Welcome back to Step Into the Light right here on Blog Talk Radio. Our guest today is Juan Cecito. He is a recovering drug addict who has just celebrated 2 years of sobriety. He has been sharing some of his experiences that led up to the point where he went into recovery, and he has a great deal more to share with us. Before we return, I would like to let listeners know that they can find Juan on his Facebook page. Simply type in Juan Cecito. However, I believe there's more than one, so I'm going to direct you to my website, which is www.pattisheene.com. On that site, I have a Blog Talk Radio tab, and underneath that tab is a page entitled Website and Social Media Information, and it gives you all of the links to all of our guests that have been on the show to date, and you will find Juan there, and you will find the link to his Facebook page. I'm sure he would like to connect with you if you happen to be local in the Los Animas area. Juan is also available at the First Presbyterian Church here in Los Animas on the corner of 6th and Maple every Wednesday evening from 5 until about 7 o'clock in the evening. And If you feel that you have a need to talk with him about the problem he is discussing on the show today, he would be more than happy to talk with you. Let's return to our show.
Well, Juan, many addicts come to a point where suicide seems to be the only option, and I believe that you yourself reached that point.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to an addicted person contemplating suicide?
Reach out for help. You know, as an addict, I know that's the hardest thing to do is reach out for help, but reach out because, you know, you're hurting deep down inside. Something is really hurting you or bothering you that to where you can't, you don't want to face reality no more. You want to be done with it, you know. Just reach out to your local pastor, you know. First Presbyterian Church has a great pastor, you know what I'm saying? And I know it sounds like I'm being biased, but he is wonderful. He is great. He'll listen. He can talk to you. Everything, you know. I mean, reach out to somebody that you're close to, you know. Your suicide hotline will help you. Somebody that you can trust, just reach out because, you know, you're not, if you end your life, you're not just hurting yourself and taking away the pain. You're hurting everybody else that loved you. You know what I'm saying? Your mom, your dad, if they're still alive, everybody, your brothers, sisters, your kids, if you have them, grandkids, you know. And I didn't realize when I was in my addiction, you know, I should have talked about the things that were bothering me. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You know, that's where it led me, you know, when I was 7 years old, you know, back when they had catechism at St. Mary's, you know, I was molested by one of the guys there. I held that in at Pat up until I was like 42, 43 years old. And
wow.
I got drunk one day and somebody that I loved called me out on it and said that you're hiding something dark that you've never told anybody. And I told her, and I felt so ashamed and embarrassed. And I figured she would tell her, you know, she'd go tell the town, and, you know, and I figured this was my way out of, you know, getting out of it. And so I used a scalpel blade and cut my wrist open, you know, my forearm, almost to my elbow. It took, I think it took 85 stitches to stitch it up inside and out. And I nicked my main artery on it. And they said that I was lucky to be alive when they found me.
Wow.
So, to reach out to any addict who is out there listening or anything, just reach out to somebody. There's somebody out there to help you and willing to help you. So.
No, yeah. I meant to bring this up earlier. You, just so our listeners know, you were raised in a, I don't know what I would say, fairly strict, but I mean, you were raised very much in a church. You were raised with Christian beliefs, and yet it took you a while to actually come back and say, hey, God, I really need you now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I'd like to point out, because I think a lot of people grow up and they have that background, but you know, life gets in the way and the world gets in the way, and we're so easily led into what the world says is valuable and important. And I just wanted to kind of mention that, you know, it's not like you had no Christian upbringing, because you definitely did. I know you did.
Yeah. You know, I believed in a God, you know, but when that happened to me, you know, when I got molested by that guy, you know, I lost a lot of faith in God. You know, I really didn't believe that he was there because he didn't help me. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm older and all the trials and all the mess ups and screw ups that I did in my life, and he could have taken my life many times. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I've tried suicide twice. You know what I'm saying?
And
he could have easily taken me. I could have easily OD'd so many times. I should have, but I didn't. And so I know God has me here for a reason. And every trial that I went through, good or bad, you know, was a trial that he set me on a path where I am today, because
yes.
I've got all this experience that I can share with anybody or with whoever wants to hear me. You know, it doesn't matter what it's from molestation to suicide to drug addiction to abuse to anything. I can relate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know he has a plan for me. And this is my plan, is to share my story with people. You know, get this dark cloud out of this town and get, you know, I know the drugs will always be here, but try to get most of it out of here. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Or try to
right.
save lives. Try to save lives. That's my biggest point, is to try to save
mm-hmm.
one life. If I could save, with this message here today that I speak with you, Aunt Pat, can save one life, I've done my job.
Yes,
because that person
exactly.
can save one life. You know what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying? And then that person might
yeah.
save somebody's life. So, you know, it's a trickle effect. And, you know, I'm just grateful that God has given me the courage and the strength, the knowledge and the wisdom to go out and do what I do. You know, I am so grateful for that, and the people who supported me in my recovery and who have been my backbone in my recovery also.
Mm-hmm. And something else you brought up too, Juan, that I would like to emphasize is the importance of talking about something, a traumatic event that has bothered you for years and years and years. And
mm-hmm.
even though I have not experienced it to the degree that you have, of course, as you know, my mom recently passed away, and I'm still dealing with that, and I told listeners that. And
uh-huh.
my daughter came to me here not too long ago with something that bothered her way back when she was, like, you know, 14, 15. She's like, Mom, I was really hurt that you did that. Really, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, I said, you know what, I'm so glad that you shared that with me, because here there were things I wish I had shared with my mom, and, of course, now she's gone. And I can never
right.
share those things with her. So, yeah, it's very important that psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, that you come clean with the people that you have issues with, or that you share with somebody
yeah.
those deep hurts, because they don't go away. They don't heal if you don't allow them to heal. So
right.
I just thought, you know, you gave me the perfect opening to bring that up. So I thought I would.
Yeah.
Not only have you stayed clean for 2 years now, you have shared your story with other addicts. And
mm-hmm.
I would like to know if you would share with us, how do you handle sharing your story with an addicted friend or acquaintance with whom you used to engage in addictive behaviors? That's got to take a lot of strength and a lot of courage.
It really does, Aunt Pat. And, you know, every time that I go out, and I do share my story with people that I have done drugs with, or, you know, like you said, been around with. You know, I knock on their door. I let them know. You know, I always have my NA book with me, or my Just for Today book, and
mm-hmm.
I'll just let them know. I'll just ask them, hey, is it okay to come in and share my story with you? And, you know, so far, I've had 100% let me in their house if they're there. You know, and share my story. And I go in and just let them know, you know, hey, you know where I've been. I've been where you're at right now.
Mm-hmm.
I says, you know, look where I'm at now. You could be in the same position. But that's up to you. I'm not here to tell you to stop. I'm just here to share my story with you and what it has done for me. And so I just let them know, you know, from beginning to end of my addiction, what recovery has done for me, and what God has done for me, and my church family, and my support group has done for me. So, and, you know, like I said, I pray before I go in, and, you know, so I have the armor of God on with me, and I'm not comfortable in my recovery, but I am very strong, and I think that I know that in my heart and in my mind that I know that that's not what I want in my life, and what I want to help people. So.
Right.
You know, so that's that's what gives me the strength and the courage. You know, I mean, that's what gives me the strength to go talk to the other people that I've used with or that I have dealt with before.
Well, I have to commend you, Juan, for your ability to do that, because it's a commendable thing, that's for sure. And I think the fact that you say people welcome you into their home and let you sit down and tell their story, that says right there that they are seeking to.
Yeah.
They're looking
yeah.
for a way out. If they weren't, then they probably would slam the door in your face, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and like I said, you know, no addict is going to go ask for help because they don't think they need it.
Exactly.
So that's why I'm going to them. That's why I'm going to them. So just to let them know, hey, I'm not telling you to quit, but if you have the desire to stop using, I'm here for you. And
mm-hmm.
this is what recovery can do for you. I am a prime exact good example of what recovery and God can do for you in a church family and your support.
Yes.
Family.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you also shared your story with local, anyway, high school students. How do you think your message was received by them?
You know, I was really nervous that day when I did that. You know, that was my first time I've ever shared my story with anybody. So I was nervous. But, you know, when I was speaking to the kids, I could tell that I had their attention because they were looking at me. They were,
mm-hmm.
you know, they were very interested on what I had to say. You know, there was a couple that were, you know, had their heads down, but I guarantee at least 98%, if not 99% of them kids were focused on me, on what I had to share.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I got some feedback from a few people, one of the teachers, and they were thankful that I went and shared my story, and they thought that the kids got a lot out of it because normally he said when there's an assembly or anybody comes speaking, they're normally their heads are down or they're talking. He says, but since you were local, everybody knows you.
Yes.
You had their attention. And I'm, you know, like I said, you know, I'm hoping to just touch one life. If I could touch one life, I've done my job.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm
mm-hmm.
just hoping that those kids grasp on what, if you start doing drugs and alcohol now, that later on it's going to affect you if you don't get control of it now.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
You know, and, you know, never say never because, you know, never say it's going to happen to you because, you know what, I said that I would never put a needle in my arm because
mm-hmm.
I had all my family members do that. And I thought that was the ugliest thing in the world. And what happened? I ended up doing it. I said
yeah.
I would never go to jail. And what happened? I ended up going to jail. I said I'd never do drugs. And look what happened. I did drugs. So never say
mm-hmm.
never, because you know what? Addiction can happen to anybody. Addiction does not have any discrimination towards sex, age, race, sexual identity, religion, lack of religion. It does not discriminate if you're rich, poor, medium class. It does not discriminate against nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Drug addiction, if it gets you, it will get you, and it will take you, and it will destroy your life if you let it.
Yes. Well, Juan, I like I said, you know, you're in my family. There were many times we had family get-togethers, just like many of the other younger kids and teenagers in the family. You were in and out with your friends, and, you know, it was, hi, Aunt, how are you, big hug, you know, that kind of thing. But I never really, I knew that you probably enjoyed your share of partying, which
mm-hmm.
many people in this town do, but I never
yes.
knew that you had the degree of a problem that you did. So let's talk about how you kept that part of yourself hidden.
You know, it wasn't too hard. You know, I'm the oldest out of eight kids.
Right.
You know, so when I was in junior high, you know, they really didn't keep that tight of a leash on me.
Mm-hmm.
So when I knew that I was going to go out and party and do my drugs and stuff, I would say that I was going to a friend's house, or, you know, if we were going to stay out all night, my friend would tell his parents he was staying at my house, and I would tell my parents I was staying at his house, and we'd be able to stay out all night and do whatever we wanted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so just pretty much not even coming home, just trying to stay at a friend's house or stay somewhere, you know, where nobody's going to find out. So, you know,
this was back in the day before cell phones and all that, too.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, where I lived, you know, we have a two-story house. So, you know, where my room was, I had access to the balcony or to the awning right there, to our porch, I mean. And so there'd be times that I would sneak out, you know, because I knew that they would be dead asleep, so
mm-hmm.
they wouldn't hear me. So, you know, I mean, just the crazy teenager stuff.
yeah. So what would you recommend that parents look for in their children's behavior then?
The signs that I would look for is really like isolation, because when you're doing methamphetamines and cocaine, you know, you pretty much don't want to be around people. You want to just seclude yourself and stay, you know, high and, you know, just be by yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm,
or whoever
mm-hmm.
you're using with. You know, if they're getting high, you know, if they're smoking weed, you know, just look for the signs of, you know, them. You know, I know teenagers eat a lot, but if they're, you know, really eating late at night, you know, getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning, snacking and stuff like
mm-hmm.
that, you know, just and the people that they hang with. You'll know from the people that they hang with. You know, I know you're not supposed to judge people, but, you know the bad kids from the good kids. You know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, you know, the people that they hang with is pretty much what they're going to be doing later on, eventually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so those are the signs that I would look for, is pretty much like isolation, you know, not spending too much time with the family, you know, always wanting to be with their friends, and going out all the time and staying out late.
Really late.
Staying out
yeah.
late. Yes. I mean, what is there to do in this town?
Yeah.
You know, at midnight, 1 o'clock, there's
mm-hmm.
only a few things you could be doing: having sex, doing drugs, or drinking. You know?
Yeah. That's about it.
You know, I mean, the way this culture is nowadays, you know, it's really getting that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's scary.
Oh, I know it is. I know it is. And I wanted to bring up, too, and this is from a previous show. I had a gentleman on here a couple of weeks ago who brought up, too, in relation to parent-child relationships. He said, and I'm sure your school probably reflected what was going on, or did it, as far as grades.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when I started just smoking pot and just drinking, you know, I mean, at first my grades were fine, you know, I was A's mm-hmm. and B's, and once I started getting into heavier stuff, you know, I would just try to squeak by with the C, and I was
yeah.
fine.
Yeah.
You know, I went from an A, B student to just sliding by with, you know, C's, maybe a B,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying? And I was
sure.
happy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I just wish I would have had somebody come to my school and speak to me about drugs
right.
you know, when I was a freshman or something like that, you know, just to tell me how it would have been, you know, or how it was and what it could be, you know, it might have changed my life. I don't know, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm doing, is going out and doing it.
Right. Well, what this guy had said, I just wanted to reiterate what he said, that parents need to keep in touch with their kids and ask them questions and don't settle for, how was your day? Fine. What's going on at school? Nothing. Don't settle for that. Ask
mm-hmm.
them and ask them and keep asking them and make them know that you are not going away, that you want
yep.
to know what's going on in your life. And another good thing he brought up is that a lot of times parents don't ask the hard questions because they don't want to know the answers.
That's the truth.
Uh-huh.
That is very true.
Yep.
You know,
so,
because that's how, you know, I mean, that's how it is with any teenager, because my daughter's the same way. And I'm just grateful that that she can open up to me, you know, about anything, and she knows that. So, you know,
right.
I'm just grateful that we have, her and I now have that relationship. Now that I've been clean for 2 years, this is the best relationships that I've ever had with my family members, my
mm-hmm.
own kids, and my grandkids. I mean, this is the best it's ever been, and I'm grateful
yeah.
to my recovery, and I'm so grateful for God for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes, well, I've seen, like I said, I wasn't aware of a lot that went on with you mm-hmm. on many levels, but you know, I've seen such a huge change in you, and you're so involved in our church family, and everybody over there at church just loves you. you've just done so much to add to our family at church, and you're just so strong. You're a wonderful role model for many people, younger people and older people. So I want you to know that.
Well, thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
And, you know, I really love my church family because, you know, Sam and I, you know, when we first got, you know, out of Rosada and stuff, you know, we went to the Catholic Church for a couple times, and it just mm-hmm. wasn't for us, you know.
Yeah.
We went to this, you know, we said, well, we're going to try a different church. So we ended up, I said, well, why don't we try the First Presbyterian? And we walked in there, and, you know, there's teachers of mine that I've been in school with, people from the community that know me well,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
what kind of a person I was, you know what I'm saying? And you know what? They did not look at me as that person.
Yeah.
They did not judge me. They did not look at me. They did, you know, they welcomed us with open arms, and I am mm-hmm. so grateful for that. And I love my church family, and I will never leave them. I'll do what I have to do to stay where I'm at, you know, because my church family is huge to me and in my
mm-hmm.
recovery. You know, you guys are an inspiration to me on how I, you know, how godly I, you know, yeah. But I'm just grateful for the church because you guys have done so much for us. And this is the only way that we know how to give back and serve our Lord and, you know, serve our church too.
Well, just once again to clarify for listeners, Sam is Juan's fiance, Sammy.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
And that's okay. And Sam, Juan now serves on our session at our church. We're very proud of that. That's the governing body for the Presbyterian Church, for those of you who are not familiar with that denomination. Sammy is serving as a deacon on the church. Needless to say, they became members. Gee, how long ago was that, Juan? It's been a few months now.
Buddy. Yeah.
I want to say it's been a year, huh? So they became members of our church, and they're very involved, and we're just thrilled to have them. They have many gifts and talents that they have brought to the church family, and one, I think it's called the gift of exhortation, where Juan can really go out and share the Lord with people, and that's a wonderful gift to have. Juan, law enforcement, as we know, is required to function under the constraints of law and can only do so much. You mentioned that there were times when you were walking down the street at 3 a.m. with a backpack on your back, and it was obvious what was in that backpack and what your intention was, but a law enforcement officer legally does not have the right to just stop and say, hey, let me search your backpack because I think there's something in there that shouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we as private citizens step up and be of assistance without crossing over into vigilante type behavior, if you will,
mm-hmm.
which
well,
has become a problem.
You know, as a community, what we need to do in order to get all this, you know, get these drugs off of the street is if in your area, wherever you're at, if you see anybody that does not belong in your neck of the woods or you're part of Los
Block
Animas,
or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Call the police department. You can stay anonymous. Call
mm-hmm.
the police department. Let them know that there is a suspicious person walking, and that then they can go investigate. Then they have the right, the police have the right to go investigate because somebody called in a suspicious person.
Oh, because
they
it's being
that
reported.
Suspicious
oh,
person.
Okay.
It's being reported, but you can
mm-hmm.
stay anonymous. You don't have to say your name.
Right.
But anybody sees any kind of activity at a house, a lot of activity going in and out early in the mornings, all hours of the night,
mm-hmm.
report it. You do not have to report a suspicious person. Let them know where they're, you know, which direction they're going, what they're wearing, and then the police have a right to pull that person over, search them, and I'll guarantee if they're out 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning,
mm-hmm.
they're only doing one thing. They're either going to go get drugs or they do have drugs and they're going back to go use.
Yeah.
And
hey,
so
well,
my biggest thing is, if you see any suspicious person that doesn't belong in your area, call the police. Let them know. Give them a description of the person, what they're wearing, if you can. And that gives the cops, that gives the police the right to pull that person over and to search them and ask them what they're doing and question them and ask them what they're doing in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have a call for a suspicious person.
Right.
And I think that will eliminate a lot of the drug transportation, you know, going on in this town.
Yeah.
If the community is vigilant on it and sees a lot of action at houses or, you know, people coming in and out late at night or all hours of the night, that's the best thing to do.
Anything else that you would like to share with us that I didn't particularly mention, or you would like to expound a little more on things that we have talked about during this period of time?
You know, Aunt Pat, the one thing that I could stress on is if you know anybody who needs help or who is suffering from addiction or anything like that, and they need help, let me know. I'm at the First Presbyterian Church on Wednesdays from 5 to 7 o'clock, actually. You could come in and talk to me then. I'd be more than happy to talk to anybody or give you my number, you know. As a community, you know, just be vigilant of all your surroundings, suspicious people, a lot of activity going on at houses all hours of the night. You know, report it, because, you know, that's how I think as a town and as a community, that's how we're going to get, we'll beat these drugs. And
get a handle on this
problem.
Hopefully
get all these,
yeah.
Exactly, get a handle on this problem that's tearing our town apart and our children. Right?
So,
that's true.
Juan, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today. I can't thank you enough for sharing your story. I'm sure that whoever listens to this will definitely be impacted by it, and my prayer is that people who really need to hear your message will be guided to this show, because I think you have offered us some very valuable information, and I want to thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you, Pat, and thank you for the opportunity to share my story, and I hope I can touch just one life out there.
In closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time, and when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. We hope to have you back here with us again next Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock. As a reminder, it will be Mountain Daylight Time by then. And next week will be a pre-broadcast show that was aired on the 22nd of September, because I will be flying back from New York on that date and will obviously be unable to do a live show. In the meantime, God bless you. Have a wonderful week.